Hello and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. I'm Lisa Rowland, Event Manager at Charity Digital, and I'll be your host for today's podcast on the latest in cybersecurity tactics, a very important topic that all charities should have at the forefront of their mind with more activities and services moving online. Having said that, we understand that looking after your cybersecurity is a constant process. Cyber threats grow more sophisticated, new tools to tackle them arrive on the scene, and charities must stay up to date in order to stay secure. In 2022, 30% of charities were able to identify a cyber attack that happened over the last year, with almost 2 in 5 of these attacks impacting their services and 19% resulting in a negative outcome. In this podcast, our guests will explore the most common cyber threats that charities are experiencing in 2023 and the best practice they can put in place to prevent or mitigate them. Today, I'll be joined by Rick Willem, Chief Technology Officer at PIR.org, Sophie, Resilience Officer from the National Cybersecurity Centre, and Laura Stanley, Content Writer at Charity Digital. Welcome, everybody.
Hiya. Hello.
Okay, so let's dive right in and start by discussing the risks around cyber attacks and how concerned charities should be about them. So, Rick, let's start with you. What are some of the causes and consequences of cyber attacks in the charity sector?
Well, the causes, I guess, are there are many. I mean, for one thing, charities represent quite a tempting target to bad actors. Charities have a lot of personal data, primarily from their donors. Charities may or may not be focused on security. They may not have necessarily have the resources to apply to focus on securing and the data that they do have. And they also have to deal with a lot of external communications. So they're constantly dealing with the outside world and a lot of unknown parties in their communications. So that leaves them vulnerable to a lot of different types of attacks. Charities are also, as we know, they're not really anonymous. They're trying to be known in the world. They purposefully do not operate, as we would say, under the radar. So there's very little room for an anonymity in their business, the business of doing good in the world. And so consequently, they're trying to raise their profile. And that of course, makes them a tempting target. So they're caught in a very difficult spot, charities are.
Yeah, absolutely. Sophie, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I completely agree with Rick on this one. And just kind of on that point around them not operating under the radar, that kind of trust and that respectability that they have in the community is almost heightening them in terms of their threat level. They've got a real good, a real good level of trust with their supporters, with their beneficiaries. And so that can almost be quite an attractive target for a cyber criminal in terms of spoofing their brand because they've got that notability and that credibility. So yeah, it's kind of, the trust is almost a risk. And like Rick says, they, you know, often charities have not got the financial resources or the time resources to plow into cybersecurity. And also if they do, it's kind of, you know, they're providing those services in society where there's a lack of kind of government provision or a lack of affordable private sector alternatives. So really their time and resources are heavily directed, obviously, at service users and providing their services. The little financial and time resources they do have is often not being put towards cybersecurity. And also there's maybe a lack of awareness there as well. So a lack of awareness about why charities are at risk of cyber attack, what they're at risk from, and the implications of that as well on their day-to-day operations.
I actually have a statistic to back that up. I mean, Sophie and Rick are the experts here, but we did a survey at the end of 2021 with the NCSC, and 98% of charities said that cybersecurity was really important to them, but only a third said a cyber breach would, a third of charities also said a cyber breach would be unlikely to affect their everyday operations, which we know is not true. That's a third is too many people to think that, really. And I think that it's really easy to say that you prioritize fundraising and service delivery over cybersecurity. That makes a lot of sense. That's what charities exist for. But yeah, I think that it's without understanding necessarily how cybersecurity affects both of those things really directly. And I think that's the stats that you said earlier, isn't it, Lisa? That it's a, so 30% of charities identified a cyber attack between 2021 and 2022. 38% of those attacks had an impact on the service, and 19% resulted in a negative outcome. So yeah, I think that's it's important that cybersecurity is seen as not so much of a background thing as a all over. As you know, yeah. Being part of everything. Is that, would you agree? I don't want to overstep again. I'm not the expert.
I couldn't agree more, Laura. I think you're absolutely right. I think you can't necessarily separate out cybersecurity from service delivery or fundraising, because it should be forming part of that. So any conversations that people are having around risk, you know, whether that's a return on investment or whether that's your health and safety risk, like cybersecurity should just be seen as a business as usual, and like implemented at every level of a charity and in every action. So when I'm speaking to charities, quite often I kind of boil it back down to the very basics. So what are your crown jewels of your charity? What's your mission? You know, have you got a crisis line and you're trying to help vulnerable people? Are you doing one-to-one sessions with young people, for example? And if your network is compromised, if your services go down, what's the real life impact on a vulnerable person not being able to call your crisis line? Or what's the real life impact of your staff not knowing which young person they're meant to be seeing and where and when? It's those little ways of thinking about it in the day-to-day operations of your key activities, and then bring it back from there and think about, okay, what can I do to protect those key services? You know, identify them. And work backwards from there, and just how you can implement cybersecurity across everything.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think, Rick, the point you made about kind of charities are actively trying to gain publicity and then potentially it makes them more prone to risks is really interesting. I've never kind of thought of it in that way. So every day is a school day, hey? I'm learning as well today. So this is excellent. So with those kind of concerns and consequences in mind that we've just discussed, what type of cyber threats should charities watch out for in 2023? Are there any in particular that are currently they're more prone to at the moment? Sophie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so based off another statistic for you here, based off the DCMS cyber breaches survey, charities should really be watching out for phishing attacks as the main threat, as the main cyber threat. So I think it's phishing attacks is the most common, and then closely followed by kind of spoofing or impersonating organizations, either emails or online, so websites and social media profiles. And we see a real spike in that kind of activity, especially when there's like world events. So for instance, the invasion of Ukraine, and the earthquake recently in Syria and Turkey, we see a really big rise in fake websites and fake social media accounts trying to divert donations away from real causes. And then viruses as well. So things like spyware or malware or ransomware being deployed. But often that is through phishing attacks. And the phishing attacks can be, most commonly, they are just bulk phishing attacks. So, you know, these are, you know, cyber criminals, they don't have to be the most technical experts. Often it's, you know, lone rangers in their bedrooms, just trying to hack as many organizations and as many accounts as they can at once, sending out all of these emails, hoping that somebody is going to accidentally click on a link and download something dodgy. Or it could be what we call spear phishing, when it's a much more targeted attack. Often it will be towards people who have got a level of authority or a level of financial control. So a lot of the time we see, you know, spoofed emails from pretending to be the CEO or pretending to be somebody with a lot of authority asking for a transfer of money that needs to be done urgently, or perhaps they're requesting login details or requesting access to something that is quite sensitive. So yeah, they are what we at the NCSC are seeing as like the main threats of charities to be aware of. But the new DCMS stats are due to come out, I believe next week, kind of middle of April, I think. So it'd be really interesting to see if there's any difference with last year's statistics and this year's. I don't know, Rick, what your thoughts are around fishing, if you see a lot of that activity with charities you're working with.
So I would definitely agree on all of those things. Definitely around phishing, impersonation attacks. We see that all the time. An additional thing, the impersonation attacks will come in not only over email, but also over, I don't have my mobile handy because I'm paying attention to this text, to this podcast, over text. And so you can also get situations where people that are in authority in a charity can be getting fake text that come in that look like they're coming from the CEO or the CFO of the charity directing different things. So that's another thing to look out for, not just an email vector, but also a text vector. Or something like that. So we see a fair bit of that going on. Another thing that I would say to look out for is phishing leads to different types of credentials being grabbed, right? Because a phishing can lead you to a compromised website. And then that leads to people exploiting, bad actors exploiting the situation where individuals use the same set of credentials, in other words, the same password at multiple websites. And so then once a bad actor has a password that someone reuses at multiple websites, they will typically take that. And as Sophie says, like, these are not, there are scripts that are enable bad actors to do this. You do not need to, you know, have a degree from a proper university to do this, that will take that login and compromised password and just go bang it against a bunch of other sites. And so people that have the really unfortunate practice of reusing a password at multiple sites, they can get burned by this really, really quickly if they use that compromised password at multiple sites. They can find their situation, their accounts compromised. One of the things that you can do to work against this, of course, is perhaps obviously use a different password, but then also to set up multi-factor authentication at your accounts. There's a lot of different ways to do this. The cheapest and easiest one, cheap and cheerful, is to do it via having a text sent to your mobile. But a better one is to use an authenticator application like Microsoft Authenticator or Google Authenticator or one of the other ones that's out there. There are a bunch of them, but two-factor authentication can really help with that. We're also really encouraging charities to go about making extra effort on securing their online presence. So for example, their accounts at their registrars, where they have their domains, their social media accounts, and their anchor accounts where they hold their email admin credentials. Because if a charity loses control of its online presence, that's just right. It's not quite as important as losing control of your bank account, but it's just underneath that. So we think that those are also important areas for charities to be important threats that they should be looking out for all the time, not just this year. So
great, Rick. Thank you. Some really, really great tips there. And I know I've received a few emails in my time that have been from the CEO, and sometimes they're very clearly not, and it is quite obvious, but sometimes they are quite good at, they're not that obvious that they are, but I know on Outlook there is a really easy way to kind of report them. So again, it's about finding what your process is internally of how to report these attacks, and ensuring that you're notifying the right people within the organization to get on top of these. But you used some terms there, Rick and Sophie, like phishing attacks, etc. Where can people go to find out more information about these specific terms? Because I imagine some of our listeners may not actually know what some of these things are.
So I would say head to the MCSE website. We've got tons and tons of guidance and information, and any terms that people come across that they're not sure of, if you just type into the search bar of our website, phishing or spear phishing or two-step verification or authenticator apps, you will get loads and loads of guidance and explanations of what those are. We've also got a really good newsletter that people can subscribe to called the Small Organizations Newsletter, and we actually have a Jargon Buster which goes out I think once a month, so yeah, we periodically run through all of those fun terms, and stuff changes as well. So like multi-factor authentication has got loads of different names, so I think it's really important to keep yourself updated with what the latest phrases are. Technology, as we know, moves very fast, so yeah, I would encourage people to do everything that they can to stay up to date with as much as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Sophie. And I know that the NCSE have the Charity Cyber Threat Report as well. And all resources that are mentioned in this podcast can be found in the description box for this podcast. So be sure to check them out as well, and you'll get a lot more information from those. So, okay, we've touched on what charities should be aware of and what the potential cybersecurity risks and threats are for the year ahead. So what can charities do to mitigate the risks?
I'll just jump on Sophie's last point, if that's okay, just to say that I think that having written quite a lot of content over the last few years about cybersecurity and how it affects charities, I think about cybersecurity more than I ever did before starting this job. And I think it's been really helpful personally, like knowing what the signs of a phishing attack look like. And yeah, I just think that that's the easiest first step to take, I think, in protecting your charity against cyber threats, because I think it helps you spot the signs quicker. It helps you know how to talk about it and want to talk about it at different levels. So if you don't have a policy in place, you can start thinking you need one. So it helps you talk about it board level as well, if you needed to bring it up with your trustees. I think it just puts it on the agenda a lot more and makes it become second nature. So yeah, I just really think that knowing the words, knowing what you're looking out for, being able to connect the dots, because as Sophie says, a lot of these terms have different names depending on who you're talking to. So it's quite helpful to just, and so little things like when I first started, I didn't know that what patching was. And now I know that patching is just making sure you update your software regularly. And so I think that once I understood that, I was like, well, I do that. And then, but also now I understand that you need to do it as soon as those updates come through. And then now, you know, we have in Charity Digital, we have a day when our IT manager tells us we need to update everything and make sure it's updated by this deadline. And that's really important because it means we're all doing it regularly internally. So it means that we're patching those vulnerabilities that cyber criminals can no longer exploit. So yeah, I think the easiest first step to take is get educated on it and just read everything you possibly can. But there are also much more practical stuff, sorry.
That's such a good point, Laura. And I think it almost touching on that cultural element. So the first part of what you were saying, I'm thinking about staff training, which absolutely would be on my top priorities of what a charity should do to get better protected, is training their staff. Rick, I don't know if you find this, but in cybersecurity, I think people often give very complicated names to things that don't need to be very complicated. There's a lot of jargon, as you said about patching, you know, why it's not just updates is beyond me. But yeah, training your staff, to answer your question, Lisa, would definitely be on my top priorities. I think just getting more eyes on the ground, being able to have more people that are trained in how to identify a phishing email, or to, you know, to know what a good password looks like, for example. I think that is something that charities can do for free, that will immediately better your chances of not falling victim to a cyber attack. We often use the analogy of like a row of houses and a thief. Often it's not that your charity will be directly targeted, but at some point in time, a cyber criminal is going to run your domain or your networks through their systems, and you don't want to be the house who hasn't locked their front door. So it's more a case of when, not if, it's going to happen. So yeah, training your staff, definitely. And then building on that kind of in longer terms, looking at your culture around cybersecurity. So like you were saying, you've had some messages from a CEO. So making it the norm to challenge people, make it okay for your employees to ring the CEO and say, did you just make a request for me to transfer £50,000? Mm-hmm. You know, make it okay to say if you've clicked on a link. Don't let your staff be afraid that if they've done something wrong, they can't raise it with people. Some of the best examples I've seen is where CEOs that I know have actually said, I've fallen victim to one of these attacks, and kind of lead by example in the kind of it's okay to say line of things. I've got loads of things that charities can do, but I don't want to steal all of the time. Rick, I'm interested what your top tips are if they match NCSC.
So those are, I think those are obviously bang on. The training and awareness, just because once people understand the risk and understand, you know, that they are actually part of the solution, the people involved can really, you know, make a difference. I think that as both Sophie and Laura have mentioned, people understanding that the approach, people have a mindset and a mentality and a risk model as it relates to crime and bad actors and, you know, danger in the world that is statistical in nature, and it has the notion of like, oh, well, you know, things you can do that where you're going to be targeted or something like that. And so, in other words, like if you're in a row of houses, you don't want your house to stand out, because then if a thief is going to come by and target one of the houses on your street, or you don't want to have your street stand out or something like that. But what I think that people don't realize is that all the evidence shows that in today's age, it's equal opportunity. Bad actors get very big lists, and it takes the same amount of effort to attack one target for typical types of attacks as it does to attack 1,000 targets or 10,000 targets. They just have a big, huge file, and they're just running through lists of names in many, many circumstances. Now, bad actors can also go and attack, make a determined attack against a particular organization, maybe even my organization, that when they mount that kind of an assault, it's even much more difficult. But it is, as Sophie said, where someone is coming down the street and just checking every door to every house on the street. And if you have your door locked, if you don't have your door locked, they're going to like get in or something like that. So yeah, that's that biggest part is awareness. You know, there's plenty of other things that charities can do, you know, with the actions and things like that. But one of the things is that, like, work with, if you had to just say one thing, work with your vendors that you're providing and ask them for help. I think a lot of times charities and even small businesses, because charity is a kind of small business, small, medium-sized business, it can also look to their vendors that are supplying them and ask them for help and see if the vendor can do something to help them out in this regard and take advantage of that expertise. That's another thing I would offer. Thank you.
I think there's lots of really simple and free and easy tools out there as well that charities can make use of. You don't need to have a dedicated IT professional in your charity. These are things that you could do within 10 minutes and it would instantly make your charity more protected. So I won't go into tons of detail now, but all the information is on the NCSC website. And if people look for the small charity guide and also the charity sector threat report, there's more details in there. But we've got some free tools, one of which is WebCheck. So as Rick touched on earlier around protecting your domains, WebCheck is a free tool that you can use to do that. There's also MailCheck. So we've talked a lot about phishing attacks kind of coming into charities, but what you can't check for often is outgoing mail. So MailCheck helps to set up kind of protocols on your outgoing mail to avoid cyber criminals spoofing your reputation and your brand to push out attacks externally. We've also got a really good tool called Exercise in a Box, which is a range of tools you know, discussion topics right through to simulations of cyber attacks that you can use to kind of establish what your charity's kind of baseline is with cybersecurity. So it could be that you pick one and it's a 15-minute discussion that you have at your next board meeting, or if you've got a technical team, you could do a two-hour simulation with your team on a particular cyber attack. So if you worked through kind of those, that package of offerings on the NCSC website, I think you'd get a really good overview of what your current baseline is, make some improvements quite instantly, and then be able to work towards kind of bigger goals. For example, the Cyber Essentials accreditation, which will give you a kind of a tick in the box to say that your cybersecurity is of a certain standard. So yeah, there's a whole range of things that charities of different sizes can be looking at.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point to say that it can all be done on a budget as well. So like cyber, the Charity Digital Exchange has a number of tools that you can get that do for cybersecurity, help with your cybersecurity. And we, our customer service teams also, these are all available to charities at discount, but also our customer service team are always willing to help and help you identify what you might need. And the other thing was the .org Learning Center, which is PIR's learning center, where it's got lots of guidance on everything from how to brand a website to cybersecurity. But they have a cybersecurity toolkit, which for mission-based organizations, which also helps charities identify what they need and how to implement it with the level of difficulty, which I think is so helpful. So I think there's so many different places to get a lot of guidance from. There's a weak password report, which I've found really interesting lately. And it spoke to what Rick was saying earlier about how multi-factor authentication is really helpful and how people use their passwords lots of the times. But it made me realize that more than four in five compromised passwords satisfied the length and complexity requirements of regulatory password standards. So it just goes to show that even if you think you've got a really good password, you're not always. So that's another part of sort of staying aware of the threat. That was a really long-winded sentence, but basically it can be done on a budget. Stay aware. That's me.
No, some really great tips there. And all the links to like the web check, the mail check, the exercise in the box tools, that will all be in the description, so you can go straight through to them and check them out. Just going back, there was so much mentioned there about what charities can do. So Laura, from your perspective in regards to somebody that's been researching it a bit more, and like you say, you're a bit more invested and you've been more invested since joining Charity Digital, what is the first thing you did to I guess learn more about cybersecurity? And Rick and Sophie, what is one thing that charities can start with? Is it a case of making your staff more aware of the risks? Is it a case of investing in software? So if there was one thing you could choose to start, where would you be? And Laura, what was the most helpful thing for you in the first instance?
This is a really good question. I think knowing the signs of how to, personally, what I found most helpful is knowing the signs of an email that looks fraudulent. Just because we've all had those CEO urgent ones, and taking the time to step back and realize because I think that's part of the big phishing tactic, right? Make you act with urgency because the CEO is asking you something really important. But actually, no, take a step back and ask yourself, would they be asking me this? Should I just check in? And don't act with sort of the fear of needing to do it really quickly. So I think, yeah, I would say that education piece has been really, really helpful. And yeah, I think that's probably, just say, look up all that, like, go on the NCSE website, find out what phishing actually is. It's there in basic terms, and that's and most places, there's lots of places where they will have that stuff in basic terms. So even though it sounds really incomprehensible, sometimes there are lots of places that are dedicated to making it not seem incomprehensible, and it's not inherently incomprehensible. I can understand it. So that's where I would start.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I think I agree with you on that one. And it's just a case of learning about, like you say, taking a step back, looking at the subject line, looking at the email, looking at the signature of the email. Is the signature the usual one that the CEO would use? And just kind of noticing those tiny little things that may be different. And like you say, not acting on it straight away.
Yeah, exactly. Even looking at the source of the email, right? Because sometimes bad actors don't even change that. So it says, it might say CEO, but it the actual email address will not be the right one. But it's just not acting with the immediate fear, as you say.
Yeah. So Sophie, what would you say the first thing charities should do if they're just starting to think more seriously about cybersecurity? What would you advise that they do first?
This is a really difficult question because I'm thinking about everything and there's so much to choose from. There's so much good advice out there. But I would say if a charity is just kind of taking their first step on their journey to better cybersecurity, I would say read up on it and understand what the current landscape is in terms of the threats to the charity sector, and then use that as a basis to reflect on where your charity then sits within that. Have you got particular vulnerabilities? Are you working in a particularly sensitive area? Are you working overseas? Understanding that threat makeup, and then where your next steps then need to be from there. And I think also what that will do is help you as you're reading through that guidance. So I'm specifically thinking about the small charity guide and the threat report that I mentioned earlier. As you're reading those documents, that will firstly give you some really simple steps you can implement today and tomorrow to build your resilience in kind of the first instance. And then it will also give you a better understanding and kind of empower you to go and talk to your senior leadership, to talk to your CEO and say, this is what the situation is for the sector. This is where our charity currently is. And this is what we need to do next. Or it could be, I don't know what we need to do next. Can you help me find the right answers to protect our organization? And when you're reading that, like I said earlier, just constantly have in the back of your mind, what are you ultimately trying to protect? Is it your beneficiary information? Is it your donors' credentials? Is it a particular service that you have to absolutely keep running 24/7? That's kind of a cheat because I've managed to slide in like four or five different different top tips there. That's what I would do first if I was taking my first steps.
No, that's excellent. Thank you, Sophie. And Rick, do you have any additional advice to that?
Difficult to go in Sophie's wake on any topic, but regardless, I'll make a whack at. So this is probably, and maybe this is maybe summing up kind of what Sophie said. I was thinking about this when Laura was responding, and I would say that probably the first thing that I would say that a charity would be well served to do is to really kind of understand your risks. Like if I had to stand on one foot and summarize, like understand where you are, because different charities, different sizes, different ages, different business approaches, or different operational models are going to have different kinds of risks and things like that. And so understanding how the charity operates, it was going to present a different set of risks and therefore have a different set of mitigations and actions and things related to that. So that's probably the way that I would sort of summarize it. I think that a lot of what Sophie was saying was in and around that. If somewhere the transcript would probably be like reflecting that, but that's sort of the way that I would summarize it. Say, understand your risks. Thanks.
I'm nodding along in the background with Rick here, 100%.
So such great advice, and especially for a novice like me as well. I've learned a lot today, so thank you so much. Does anyone have anything else to add before we close up today?
I do, actually. Just that I think this is another thing that I learned quite early on, that cybersecurity and looking after it is a lot more than antivirus and that there's a tool for sort of everything you need. Password managers, if you want to use multiple passwords across things, right? As Rick was saying, the authenticator for your multi-factor authentications. I don't know if I necessarily have the nous to like be able to recommend specific tools, or other than say like go to the Charity Digital Exchange, go to the NCSE, go to the .org Learning Centre, but and also know, as Rick said, that most vendors will be able to help you with some sort of tool. But like, I think part of the start can be recognizing that it's more than antivirus. And I think that's a good thing to note.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, you're never done. And so anyone who says it, you're never done. And so as this, it, maybe a modern way of saying that, it's a journey or whatever. a friend of mine used to say ages ago, the perfect is the enemy of the good. And so just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you shouldn't do something. So it's a little bit like, you know, our efforts in the area of recycling or something like that. Like we're, you know, you can take one, you know, make a simple step and to make a little bit of improvement, because you never really know what kind of improvement you're going to make in your security that's going to make the difference in thwarting a very critical cyber attack. So don't be off-put and discouraged by the fact that there's so much out there. Any little incremental improvement you can make is that step along that journey. So that's one bit of encouraging speak that I would offer to folks.
Yeah, and I think my only additional point, or maybe 2 points, would be just to not let it scare you. Like Laura touched on this earlier, it, you know, we use words like threats and criminals and attacks, and they, you know, they are quite big scary words, but it doesn't have to be scary. And also to not be afraid to ask for help with things and ask for advice. It's better if you don't know to speak to your colleagues, to speak to your peers, to reach out into the sector, to reach out to Charity Digital, send an inquiries form to NCSE, reach out to PIR. There's so many organizations and groups out there that can offer support and advice, and people asking the same questions. So I think it's just finding that group of people as well that you can plug into to better support the sector. And the only other thing maybe to mention that I don't think we've talked about is thinking about a response and recovery plan. So you can do all these mitigations, but what's going to make you feel even more secure and maybe make it a little bit less scary is knowing that if something does go wrong, you know what to do. You know who's doing what, you know what your mitigations are, you've got the phone numbers of who you need to call, that kind of stuff. So I think just having that as a security blanket in the background, again, go to our website, search for response and recovery, you'll find all the answers.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Sophie, because that I can imagine there's nothing worse than something happening and then just panicking about what to do. So yeah, that would, I guess, ease a lot of people's minds when it comes to, if it comes to there is an attack. So thank you all so much. That was so helpful. I mean, my key takeaways from that was, you know, the charity sector are not immune to these attacks, and it's something that charities should definitely dedicate time to understand and understand the risks and how to prevent them. And also just then as well, it's okay to reach out and ask for help. There's so many resources out there, so use them, and they're free. So make sure that you are visiting all the correct websites and using those resources and all of the tools and the mail checks and the exercise in the box and everything else that is available to you, because it will make your life a lot easier as well. But if you do want to read up more on cybersecurity, there is plenty more content on the Charity Digital website. And like I said before, any resources mentioned in this pod can be found in the description box. Thank you so much, Rick, Laura and Sophie. And thank you all for listening. And be sure to follow us on our socials to keep up to date with everything we have going on in regards to content and news.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.